From NPR, it's Latino USA. Watch out for the girls who start early. Dolores Huerta talked so much when she was little, her grandfather nicknamed her Seven Tongues. But the veteran organizer came to rely on action, and that's still her message at age 80.
You have power in your person, but you have to come together with other people, with other workers, and you have to take action. Because then you can change your situation. And nobody's going to do it for you. You're the only ones that can do it. You're the only ones that can change the kind of circumstance that you live in.
Also, she did it. Dora the Explorer turns 10 years old, a decade of spunk and Spanish.
Dora, of course, is not at all part of the immigration debate, but she has probably made it more appealing for little kids and their parents to know people who speak Spanish. You know, that's a really positive thing you can put out there.
That's all coming up. I'm Katie Davis. Stay with us.
From the Latino USA News Desk, I'm Sean Collins. In California this week, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger deployed National Guard troops to the state's border with Mexico. Speaking in San Diego, Schwarzenegger said the troop deployment was not meant to replace comprehensive immigration reform, but he didn't seem all that hopeful that the nation would see that anytime soon.
We have, sadly to say, lawmakers in Washington who are being paid to solve those kind of problems. And as you could see, they're not capable of solving those kind of problems, which is a shame.
Last week, President Obama signed new legislation into law that provides $600 million to combat the trafficking of drugs, guns, and people across the U.S.-Mexico border. The Associated Press reports this week a grim statistic from the border: a spike in the number of Border Patrol agents who have died at their own hand. Records obtained by the AP show that at least 15 Border Patrol officers have committed suicide since February of 2008. The agency is said to have undertaken a suicide prevention program for its 22,000 officers. In Arizona, Sheriff Joe Arpaio has until Tuesday to cooperate with Justice Department lawyers investigating charges of civil rights violations in Maricopa County. The department has given Arpaio and his lawyers until August 24th to produce documents it believes will help investigators determine whether Sheriff Arpaio's policies and law enforcement sweeps discriminate against Latinos. Arpaio's lawyers contend they are not being uncooperative, but the Department of Justice cannot require the production of documents just to see if it can find something to support the claim of discrimination. Latinos and African Americans were the hardest hit when it came to foreclosures, according to a study of Northern California housing loans. Nearly half of all defaults and foreclosures involve Latino borrowers. The study conducted by the Center for Responsible Lending said most defaulting borrowers were not stretching beyond their means to buy a larger house than they could afford. Most of the properties, in fact, were modest in size and were instead involved in refinancing. The study shows that Latino and African American families disproportionately received the most expensive and risky loans during the subprime lending boom. Where Latinos live is in the news for another reason. Of all demographic groups, Latinos are most likely to live near toxic materials. That's the conclusion of a study conducted at the University of California at Irvine. The study looked at neighborhoods around mid- and large-sized manufacturing plants. It relied on EPA inventories of emissions of toxins to the air, water, and above and below ground. The study's authors believe the reason Latinos are more likely to be exposed is that many are recent immigrants and may not have the language skills or familiarity with U.S. law to know that they are at risk. America lost a great musician last week. Steve Jordan died in San Antonio. He had liver cancer. He was 71 years old.
Soy de Texas, es mi orgullo ser chicano. En los barrios me pueden encontrar.
Steve Jordan was the undisputed master of Tejano accordion. Born to a family of contract migrant farm workers, the frailest of 15 children, he was nearly blinded at birth. And as he told Latino USA last year, that meant he was not able to pick cotton with the rest of the family.
I couldn't see well enough to go help them pick cotton at all. So I learned how to play because I was there by myself all the time.
He first picked up the harmonica and then the guitar, but it would be his artistry with the accordion that will earn him a place in the pantheon of American music. You can stay connected to news throughout the week by following us on Twitter, where we're Latino USA, or follow us online at latinousa.org. I'm Sean Collins in St. Louis.
It's Latino USA. I'm Katie Davis, filling in for Maria Nojosa, who's on vacation.
I worked on your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground by the light of your moon.
It was the perfect birthday party for longtime activist Dolores Huerta. There was the concert called Weaving Movements Together at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles. And there was lots of good political talk and birthday tributes. Here's actress Alfre Woodard.
Whatever age they are, we owe a lot to this American hero, Dolores Huerta. And when you see her tonight, let me tell you, she looks fabulous. That's something for all you ladies. If you want to look fabulous when you are 80 years old, get busy dedicating your life to the people. I think that's the main lesson here.
A life's work. That's what Maria Nojosa had a chance to ask Dolores Huerta about earlier this month. They began their conversation in the early years, when Huerta was just starting out. She left a teaching job because the farm worker children in her classroom were hungry, and she felt she could do more for them by organizing their parents. It was the early 1960s, and she had just begun to work with Cesar Chavez.
Cesar said, farm workers will never have an organization unless you and I do it. And then he said in the next breath, but they will not have a national union in our lifetime because the growers are too rich, they're too powerful, and they're too racist.
Most people know the United Farm Workers. Mm-hmm. Most people know Cesar Chavez. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you and I were talking about before we started was that mm-hmm. you actually think it's important to talk about your relationship with Cesar Chavez, to talk about what we as Americans can learn mm-hmm. about the experience of organizing and creating a labor movement. So what are the lessons that we need to learn from Cesar mm-hmm. Chavez and you, Dolores Huerta, about creating essentially something from nothing?
Basically, in the type of organizing that I do and we did when we organized a union, was to get small groups of people together, having a meeting in their homes, having them do the invitations, and then we would talk to them about how they have power. And when you think about farm workers, that they were immigrants, many don't speak English, they don't have any assets, they don't have any money, and yet we have to convince them that they have power. And when they would ask, where's the power? And we would say, it's in your person. You have power in your person. But you have to come together with other people, with other workers, and you have to take action. Because then you can change your situation. And nobody's going to do it for you. You're the only ones that can do it. You're the only ones that can change the kind of circumstances that you live in. And once the people understood that, and they understood that they had to work with other workers, they had to form an organization to make things happen.
But there was a tremendous amount of sacrifice mm-hmm. and blood, sweat, and tears mm-hmm. and years that went into creating the United Farm Workers.
People think about this big strike that we had in 1965, the historic grape strike, when all of the farm workers went out on strike. It didn't just happen. We had been organizing in the San Joaquin Valley for 3 years, from 1962 to 1965. We had been organizing the workers in these small meetings in their homes. And it wasn't just a strike. It was, you know, the marches to Sacramento to get legislation passed. It was the farm workers going out to the cities to convince people not to buy grapes. So at the end of the day, you had like 17 million Americans that stopped eating grapes. But it was the farm workers that went out there to the cities, to the churches, to the labor unions, to the universities, to ask people to support them. In other words, they were using their personal power.
I still find it fascinating, though, because, again, this was the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. And you were the head negotiator representing the union, the workers, negotiating with these farm owners, powerful men. And there you were negotiating. And you're known as a very tough negotiator. So where did you get that, again, as a woman born in New Mexico from not a wealthy family, you know, to be able to sit at that negotiating table and to make demands? Where did you find that kind of power to do that?
Well, basically because you knew that you were representing the workers. And whatever you decided at that negotiating table was going to affect my committee. You know, they're the ones that gave me the proposals. I sort of represented them. But knowing that whatever we decided to on wages was going to be their take-home pay, whatever we negotiated in working conditions was going to affect them when they were out there in those vineyards or in those lettuce fields or in those citrus fields. So it was, you know, you were doing it for them. And I think that that's what kind of gives you the power. Because when you're doing something for other people and trying to help other people, then it gives you kind of the motivation and the energy that you need. I think the struggle gives you energy.
There are a lot of women who look up to you, women across the board. Latinas very specifically look up to you as an icon, as a role model. I mean, I look up to you. You're 80 years old. You look amazing. You took a red eye. Here you are doing what you have to do. But there is one thing in your life story, and you have an amazing life story. And every time I see you, I think I always say to you, wow, Dolores, and you actually had 11 children along with it. You didn't spend a lot of time with those 11 children, though.
No, I didn't. And, of course, that's one of the things that I think all of us who are active women and we don't spend as much time with our children as we should.
How do you manage that? How did you, the guilt, the, you know, I mean, did your kids come back to you and say, Mom, how come you weren't there? And how did you manage that as a mom?
Well, my children kind of grew up in the movement, so they've sort of, the type of experiences that they had are experiences they never could have had in a traditional kind of family. Some of them went to jail with me, actually. You know, some were arrested, and they traveled all over the country, and I had all of these amazing, amazing experiences, which I think really...
And did they reclamaban? Did they say, Mom, don't go to that meeting. Mom, don't go to that protest. Mom, I'm tired of you supporting Cesar Chavez on his hunger strikes. Did they say that to your kids? Or?
Well, they were actually there with me in the marches and, you know, in the boycotts. And so they were part of the movement. They were really part of the movement. And you know, I regret wasn't able to give them what I had. I had a nice middle-class upbringing. I had the dancing lessons and the music lessons and, you know, the nice clothes and all the stuff that my children didn't have. That's the one thing I really regret. But they've grown up very strong. My oldest son's a doctor. My second son's an attorney. I have a son who's a chef, a daughter who's an emergency room nurse, a daughter who's a filmmaker, a daughter who's a teacher. You know, they've all grown up very, very healthy. You know, I have one daughter, my oldest daughter, who is ill. She's schizophrenic, okay? But the rest of them, out of the 11, they came out pretty good.
And I love the fact that you're so open about these things, Dolores. You talk about the fact that you have a daughter who's schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. So mental illness is something that is right there for you. You talk about the fact that it's sexuality. Mm-hmm. Gay and lesbian rights are very important because of members of your own family. We have a saying in Spanish, no tiene pelos en la lengua. She doesn't have hairs on her tongue, which means that you speak the truth. Is that also part of kind of your core being, that you're not afraid to take on these issues that may be taboo, that we're not supposed to talk about?
Well, I think that when you're trying to, again, to work for social justice, and so we have to educate, and sometimes that education may be uncomfortable for people to hear. Say women's right to choose, for instance, even though I have 11 children, I believe that women have the right to decide for themselves how many children they want to have. In terms of the LGBT issues, you know, I like to always quote Benito Juarez, what he says. You know, el respeto al derecho ajeno es la paz. We have to respect other people's rights. And if people are gay or lesbian I mean, that is their right. It doesn't affect your family at all. So why do we want to discriminate against people because they have a different sexual orientation? In fact, that people get killed because they happen to be gay or lesbian, and that is wrong. And I think for women, just in general, when we talk about women feeling intimidated and they feel like if they speak up, they're going to be criticized, hey, that's okay. You know, it's important that we speak up, even if we do get that criticism from other people. We have to consider that it's like a blessing.
I recently saw you at an event. Mm-hmm. It was in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of politicians there. And Senator John McCain was there. And I remember I walked up to you and I said, so, Dolores, did you see Senator McCain? And you said, oh, yes. He came up to me to say hello. And you said to me that you looked at Senator McCain straight in the eyes and said, I am very disappointed in with you, Senator. And that he then turned around and said to you,
I'm disappointed in you.
That takes a lot of chutzpah, right? To stand up for you as and look straight ahead at a senator like John McCain and say, I am disappointed in you.
Well, I think the one thing that we forget, and this is one thing that we teach all of our people when we organize, politicians work for us. We do not work for them. We pay taxes. We pay their salaries. We have to make demands on them. And when they are not doing the right thing, we have to call it to their attention, right? Because I think one of the things that we're missing in our democratic process is that, yes, we want people to vote, but it's not enough to vote. We have to advocate. We have to stay on top of these people, because what happens is every politician gets a lot of pressure from the corporate world. I mean, they have their full-time paid lobbyists. They're right there in Washington, D.C., or they're in their home districts, whatever, always putting pressure on them. And we, the ordinary taxpayer and the ordinary voter, we think, okay, I'm going to vote and I'm going to, you know, just expect that so-and-so is going to do the right thing. It doesn't happen that way.
But when people feel so powerless, mm-hmm. you say what about those people who just feel despair in terms of feeling represented in our democracy? What do you say to them?
Well, your vote is important. You are important. It's important that you get out there, that you call that representative, that you get your friends to do it. You know, get a few people together and just go down to that congressman, you know, that state legislator's office and pound the table. I think we've seen the example, and maybe this is not a good example, but the Tea Party movement, okay? I mean, this is what they're doing, basically. I mean, not agree with them on their values or maybe even on their tactics, but the thing is that they are coming together and they're putting the pressure. And that's what we as ordinary citizens have to do, because the people in the United States of America are fair-minded people. And they want to do the right thing. But sometimes they don't have the right information, and they don't know what to do. So then you have to go to those sources of information, like public television, and then act on it. It's our duty, actually. It's our civic duty. And I feel this so strongly because I do believe in democracy. I do believe that we can change the laws like we did for the farm workers, right? To get them that cold drinking water and those rest periods and get some of the pesticides off of our food, you know. And for women to get the right to vote and get women elected, you know, to office, all of these things. But we have to do it. We can just remember that if we don't do it, it's not going to happen. We have a responsibility.
Dolores Huerta, thank you for all of the work that you've done. On behalf of so many working Americans, we really appreciate it. It's been an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Veteran civil rights activist Dolores Huerta, speaking to Maria Hinojosa earlier this month for One on One, a public television series produced by WGBH Boston. For more about One on One and Dolores Huerta, go to our website at latinousa.org. In a minute, racing through the rainforest and swinging on the vines, the world according to Dora. That's coming up, so stay with us.
From NPR, it's Latina USA.
Whose birthday is it? Yeah, it's Dora's birthday.
Feliz cumpleaños, Dora. Dora the Explorer is celebrating her birthday, el número 10. Nickelodeon's award-winning cartoon is in its 10th year now, and the young Latina character is a phenomenon, teaching children in both English and Spanish. Latino USA's Sochi Dorsey sent in this audio birthday card para Dora.
We did it!
We did it! We did it! We did it!
Yeah, lo hicimos!
We did it!
We did it!
I'm Valerie Walsh Valdez. I'm one of the co-creators and executive producers of Dora the Explorer. For Dora to have lasted this long, I think it's pretty unusual in kids' TV. And she's just been embraced around the world, and it's bigger than any of us ever anticipated.
She helps us learn so we can be smart and have a great time, and maybe one time we might discover things like that.
And the network actually asked us to make her Latina because our exec had gone to a conference where they talked about the lack of positive role models for Latinos on TV. And we said, that is such a fantastic idea.
She makes friends throughout her travels.
She is nice to the animals and she is cute.
Hi, I'm Dora.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Sanchez, and I'm the voice of Dora the Explorer. I've done, like, a lot of amazing things, you know, while being Dora. When I'm in the booth, I get to be this awesome girl who's swinging on vines and hanging out with, you know, all her friends in the rainforest, all these animals, and just doing all this crazy, exciting stuff.
Come on, Bombardos, let's remember our friends.
I definitely felt relatable to the character because she's bilingual and she's Hispanic, but Dora is also just, like, a great friend, and that's why kids, like, even if they're not Hispanic, they all relate to Dora.
My favorite characters is Dora, Boots, I think Dora's cousin, Diego or something?
Yeah, Diego.
Dora, of course, is not at all political. You know, she's certainly not part of the immigration debate, but I would say that she has probably made it more appealing for little kids and their parents to know people who speak Spanish and want to speak Spanish themselves, and you know, that's a really positive thing you can put out there.
Felicidades, Dora.
Felicidades, Dora.
Happy birthday. 10 is a fun age because I just turned 10.
Happy birthday. Happy 10th birthday, Dora.
Happy
That was produced by Sochi Dorsey. To see the voice of Dora, go to latinousa.org. And you can also find out the airtimes for Dora's anniversary special. And now, time for Historias from StoryCorps. First, a conversation between Carlos Mosqueda and his daughter, Cindy. They shared memories of his father, her grandfather, Bartolo Mosqueda. Every day, Bartolo Mosqueda worked for a company making pipes, and then he went home to East Los Angeles and got to work at his second job as a traditional healer.
My dad was basically a chiropractor, but he didn't have a license. He would come home from work, and in our backyard, he had a bench, and he'd have four or five people waiting for him already.
Yeah, he had his workshop back there.
And my dad never charged for his services.
Mm-hmm.
People that played sports would come with a dislocated ankle, shoulder, what have you. They'd come in limping, and they would literally leave walking. Dad used to say, to him who is upstairs, there is no impossible thing. Para el de arriba no hay ninguna cosa imposible. Just recently, I happened to help a client, and he said to me, I used to know a Mr. Mosqueda that used to live in East L.A. He was a sobador. And when he said that, my jaw nearly dropped. Then he said, se llamaba Bartolo. His name was Bartolo.
Mm-hmm.
¿Alguna relación a usted? Any relation to you? And I looked at him in the eyes, and I said, that's my father. And tears ran out down his eyes. He said, your father cured my wife when nobody else could. Grandpa made an impact like that, that has lived on. To have seen him do that, to make a kind of difference like that, that's an incredible thing.
Carlos Mosqueda and his daughter Cindy in East Los Angeles. And another story, Hilda Chacon and her husband Pedro Moran Palma love to tell the story of how they met. It was 20 years ago, and Hilda was visiting the U.S. from her native Costa Rica, and Pedro spotted her at a party.
I saw there was a beautiful lady sitting in this party, and at first I thought you were with somebody else, so I didn't get close to you. And then I realized that there was a guy who was bothering you.
I was wearing like a short skirt, and he insisted that I would go up the stairs so he would see me from behind. I was about to get into a fight with him when you came. You apologized for him being so rude and drunken, and I told you that I was divorced, that I had a kid, and I just started talking very poorly about men, saying, I don't know why people get married. You have to put up with so much crap. How come I didn't scare you?
I found you fascinating. I was mesmerized, I think is the right word, asombrado. And after we met, I thought about getting married. My friends were saying that I was crazy, but my whole body's telling me you cannot let this go. It's hard for people to believe that we only dated for 10 days.
Yep. And then all of a sudden you said, well, I don't make much money, but if you want, we could get married. I thought this man is either totally crazy or has the biggest cojones on earth. And something very important was how Nadia was going to react to your presence. She was 6 at the time. And I remember that the two of you sat to watch a TV show. And little by little, she started leaning on you. And then I remember she sat on your lap and put her hand over your shoulder. That's how I picture the two of you.
We became a family.
We did. Even if you stop loving me tomorrow, I could never pay you back for all the love and affection you have given my baby.
I'm a really proud stepfather. We haven't stopped having fun since we met.
I know. I always wonder when people say, oh, everyday things kill love. I probably used to say that before I met you. But, you know, going to the market or paying the bills don't become chores, but fun things that we do. I believe that we started a conversation 20 years ago and we have never stopped.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. These are the best years of my life. I wouldn't change them for anything.
Love you, papito.
Yo también.
Pedro Moran Palma and his wife, Hilda Chacon. StoryCorps Historias is now recording interviews in New York, San Francisco, Fargo, North Dakota, Central Pennsylvania, and Atlanta. To find out how you can record your interview, go to latinousa.org and click on the StoryCorps link. And for this week, that's Latino USA. The program comes to you from the Futuro Media Group, online at futuromediagroup.org, in cooperation with KUT Austin. I'm Katie Davis. Join us next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting the 2010 Community Health Leaders, working to improve health nationwide at communityhealthleaders.org. This is NPR.